Make It Right, the manufacturing podcast.
Supply chain management has been defined as the design, planning, execution, control, and monitoring of supply chain activities with the objective of creating net value, building a competitive infrastructure, leveraging worldwide logistics, synchronizing supply with demand, and measuring performance globally. It has also been defined as the planning and coordination of all the people, processes, and technology involved in creating value for a company. This cleaner definition is from Daniel Stanton's book, Supply Chain Management for Dummies, and it, like his book, brings supply chain management into much clearer focus. I'm Janet Eastman. Welcome to the Make It Right podcast. And this week on the show, I'm pleased to have Daniel Stanton, who is also a LinkedIn Learning instructor, join me on Make It Right. So welcome to the podcast, Daniel.
Janet, thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here.
I think understanding supply chain and bringing it down for dummies, as you say, is really great. So I'm excited to talk to you about your book and what you do with LinkedIn and supply chain. So tell me a little bit about your background and how you actually became known as Mr. Supply Chain.
Sure. Well, you know, supply chain management really is often a profession of accident rather than one of intent. And, you know, that's the case for me too. So I've always been drawn to engineering and to business and to technology. When I joined the Navy, I got the chance to work in operations and logistics for an F-18 squadron. And later on, I worked as a computer guy and as a business consultant. And then I found supply chain management. And I just fell in love with the systems approach to how businesses coordinate their internal activities and how they collaborate with their customers and suppliers. Over the past several years, I've worked as a supply chain professional, done research, consulting, and teaching, and I've spent a lot of time writing and creating online courses about supply chain management.
It's kind of surprising how you got from F-18s to supply chain management, but you know what? Everybody's path is really interesting and really different. So let's start with the term supply chain management. It means a lot of different things depending on who you talk to. So what does supply chain really mean to you?
Right. Well, so if you go back 40 years, you can see that we had clearly defined professions around purchasing, around physical distribution, and around operations management. Right? So each of them had their own professional societies, they had certifications, they had degrees, and you could get together every month for a meeting with folks who did pretty much the same thing for other companies. But what was missing was the impact that each of them had on one another. So the purchasing folks learned how to squeeze better prices out of their suppliers by offshoring, and often settling for lower quality products and buying them in larger volumes. That made the purchasing numbers look great, but what did it actually do for the company? Well, in a lot of cases, it drove up the cost of transportation and warehousing, and it created huge costs for quality control and inbound inspection. And that's like just one example. If you look across those three functions of logistics and purchasing and operations, you see over and over again how the decisions that you make to improve the metrics for one of them actually increase the cost for the others. So as a company, you really need to take a holistic view of procurement, logistics, and operations together in order to make sure that you're managing those trade-offs and creating a balance rather than just shifting costs and problems back and forth. And that's really where supply chain management comes in. It's about creating that internal alignment and then collaborating with your customers and your suppliers to make sure that all of your people, your processes, and your technology are delivering the stuff that your customers want and need, and you're doing it as efficiently as possible. So fast forward to today, that's really where the profession is moving. In the US, the old professional associations for purchasing, physical distribution, and operations are all rebranding, and you can't see the air quotes, but they're supply chain organizations, and they're trying hard to expand from their old base to include more of an end-to-end perspective. So for your listeners, if you work in logistics or procurement or, of course, in manufacturing, then from my perspective, I'd say you really work in a supply chain.
So everybody you're saying was operating in silos and they weren't really interested in what was happening on either side of their silos as long as they got what they needed. So that's probably one of the main things, the fundamentals that have changed over the last few decades, right? What else has changed?
That's right. I mean, that is often the challenge is that we operate in these silos and it's because of the incentives and the way that we structure organizations. And that's part of what makes it really hard to see the need for change and to implement changes. But, you know, what's funny about it is that supply chains have been around really for as long as we've had civilization and have been doing commerce. But supply chain management as a profession has really only been around since like the 1980s. And I'd argue that the beginning of true supply chain management was focused on planning. So a good example is the emergence of MRP systems, the manufacturing requirements planning systems, which were basically digital models for the steps in a manufacturing process. So MRP let you plan your production and your inventory around the constraints of your process, like how much material your machines could produce. Then as the technology got better, we started to see more of what I would call execution systems. So the execution systems are software where the computers actually make decisions in real time about what should happen in some part of the supply chain. So for example, warehouse execution or transportation execution systems, like give instructions to people about, you know, here's what you need to do right now and tender loads and assigned work. Today, the trend is to add a third leg to that stool, which is visibility. So we're bringing in new technologies that give us a real-time view of what's actually happening and where things are. That visibility allows supply chain managers to make better, faster decisions and to do more what I'd call exception management. So I think the combination of planning, execution, and visibility is really the big thing that's changing. And that's leading us into, you know, what folks call Industry 4.0 and a much higher potential for automation in supply chains.
Okay, so what impact has that increasing speed of communication and technology had on supply chain management?
Right. So, you know, one of the classic ways of explaining a supply chain is to describe it as three flows. You've got the flow of money, the flow of material, and the flow of information. And so every one of those flows, of course, has its own challenges. Like, if you're a manufacturer, getting your physical product from your factory to your customer without damage, that can be a real challenge. But it's also tough to manage customer order information, inspection reports, and all of the shipping documents that a company needs to have accompany the delivery. The internet and now cell phones and soon 5G communications have really transformed the way that that information flow works. So the improvements in information flow have really allowed the flow of money and the flow of material to move faster too. So that they're faster and they're moving with less turbulence or fewer interruptions. So that's one of the big changes. But then there's this other really interesting trend, because the flow of information is actually starting to replace the flow of material and money in some cases. So if you think about the evolution of like how to distribute movies and music, like I still remember a time when an album was a physical product, right? Mm-hmm. So you'd have an LP or a cassette or a DVD, and that was a very traditional supply chain with all three flows. But now music is digitalized, You just download an album directly to your phone. And what that really means is the flow of material has been absorbed into the flow of information. And the same thing is happening with financial flows. So, like, you used to pay in cash or write a check for the album, but now you just pay online with a credit card number. And so the whole financial transaction is actually just a part of, you know, electrons going back and forth on the internet. So this digitalization, I think, is really a huge and important and impactful trend, right? You can't transform every physical product and every financial transaction into a purely digitalized one. We still live in a physical world, and there are some places where you still need money today. But I think you could digitalize a lot more than what we have so far. So, you know, I really think supply chain folks, including logistics, manufacturing, procurement, really need to be watching that trend and looking at their own supply chain and thinking about how digitalization really could change or transform some parts or all of their business.
That's a really interesting perspective, because I mean, I haven't thought of the transactions in that way when you talk about the physical product actually disappearing and it just becomes bits and bytes through the internet. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff that can go that way. It's kind of scary too when everything is just based on this great big thing called the World Wide Web and digitization. It's scary.
Absolutely. And you know, the funny thing is, you know, there's so many of these things that it's hard to imagine before it happens. And then after it's happened, it's hard to believe that we ever did it some other way.
True. Yeah. Okay. So you mentioned in your book that about 70% of a company's costs and 100% of the revenues depend on how a supply chain is managed. So getting it right is essential. But how do you actually plan for and manage through an unexpected event? Because even the smallest change can create that butterfly effect and lead to chaos. And I mean, what you just said about the digital world, oh boy, my impressions of chaos, they're spinning out of control at this point in time. But how do you manage, you know, some major hiccup that may come along and prepare for it?
Well, that's right. And you know, we've got all of these changes happening around us, in particular around technology, and our supply chains, truthfully, they are all global at this point. So things that happen anywhere in the world can impact us, right? And so how do you prepare for that? I'll say, ensure that you're still able to deliver value to your customer and run a successful business and a successful supply chain. So I guess the thing that I'd say is most supply chains work reasonably well when you're able to keep them at a steady state, right? When things aren't changing. And so when you're at steady state, then, you know, you can identify excess capacity, you can clear up bottlenecks. You can just sort of see how things are supposed to work. Where it gets hard is when you're operating in a dynamic environment and where things are constantly changing. And that is the world that we really live in. So a couple of general things that make it easier to manage and to make good decisions quickly. The first is you really have to have a decent understanding of, you know, what I would call your model or your baseline. So basically, you need to make sure that you have a plan for how you think your supply chain should work. And so that includes having metrics that you can use to see, you know, how close what's actually happening is, your true performance compared to that baseline, right? How you think it ought to be. Then the second thing is to build in flexibility. So figure out where your supply chain is most vulnerable and look for ways to compensate for those vulnerabilities. So if you're relying on a single supplier for a key ingredient, could you onboard another supplier as a backup? Or maybe you need a little bit of inventory as a buffer just in case of a disruption, like a shipment gets delayed or there's bad weather, you know, in some other part of the world. But the thing that I'd say is you have to know that some of the things that you do to increase your flexibility and give you more options and protect you from those disruptions are actually the opposite of what you do if you're trying to become lean and get rid of anything unnecessary and eliminate all of the waste. It's not always the case, but it is often the case that flexibility and lean are in conflict. So it's not that lean is bad. It's not that flexibility is bad. Truthfully, both have value to the company.
I think that's probably your dog Zippy.
That is exactly what that is. That is Zippy. Do you want to roll back?
No, that's fine. Keep on going.
Oh, that's okay. So, you know, talking about flexibility and lean, I guess the thing that I'd say is you need to think about your the cost of flexibility as being a hedge against a bigger potential loss. So you really value it kind of the same way that you would an insurance policy, right? So we pay a little bit here to avoid a big expense potentially hitting us down the road. The first thing was, you know, having your model or your baseline. The second thing is building in flexibility. The third thing I'd say about, you know, protecting from disruptions is that's where you need visibility, because the sooner you can know about a disruption, the more options you have and the less it's going to cost you. So in the last few years, one of the hot new categories of supply chain software is what we call control towers. And why do people want control towers? Well, they help you respond faster and better when there's some kind of a disruption in your supply chain.
So I don't get the concept of what a control tower is. Can you just sort of briefly explain what that is?
Absolutely. And, you know, depending on which vendor you're talking to, they'll probably define it a little bit differently, focused on the features and capabilities of their package. In general, a control tower brings together information from lots of different supply chain information systems, which could be in your company, but it could also tie into suppliers and customers and third-party data sets. So if you think about pulling in things like weather or police reports or earthquake announcements, pulling all of that together into one platform so that you can see in real time what's happening in your supply chain, where you have inventory, where you have capacity, how it is likely to impact you. And ideally, it also gives you the ability to take action and respond.
Okay. Thanks. That clarifies that. Now, if the goal of a supply chain is to create value, what's the single biggest mistake that a company can make within the management of their supply chain?
That's a great question. And, you know, it's funny because what we're seeing a lot today is we've really focused a lot in supply chain on reducing cost. And that you know, when you look at Lean and Six Sigma and theory of constraints, that's kind of what we've become known for, right? Is how can you be more efficient? How can you lower cost? And I would argue it's even become kind of an obsession for supply chain people. And I get that because really, I mean, there's a lot of pressure on any business to free up cash, right? But what we're finding is that really can get in the way of longer term opportunities. And in particular, it can get in the way of innovation. So I do a lot of work with tech startups these days. And I see a ton of great ideas out there that are trying to get traction. But early on, it's hard for potential customers to calculate a return on investment for a lot of these new technologies. So if you have to show the ROI up front before you can even try something, then you're stuck in quicksand and you never get to move forward. So that's a really dangerous place to be when you're living at a time where everything is moving so fast, right? I mean, if you have to show an ROI before you can even run an experiment, then you never get a chance to try anything new. And there's a really serious risk that you're going to be left behind. So I think supply chains need to do we really need to get better at innovating. Yes, we need to free up cash for the business, but I think we need to focus on setting a little bit of that money aside to invest in experiments, and what I'd call sandboxes, so that we can be looking at new technologies and kicking the tires and trying things out without everything necessarily having to be a guaranteed success at the beginning. Because if you require every experiment to have a successful outcome guaranteed, then the truth is you're not really experimenting. You're just implementing stuff that, you know, is out there and available to you, but likely you're not going to be a first mover. At that point, you become a laggard.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I guess if the industry and the supply chain is constantly changing, and it's like this is a thing that's always in a state of change, you need to figure out ways to innovate, because eventually you're going to have to. So everything can't have an ROI attached, or like you said, you're never going to innovate, and you're going to find yourself stuck behind eventually, I would think, anyway.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. You know, the challenge is, you know, because we're so focused on cost savings, right? Mm-hmm. We really measure everything by ROI, and it's become all, you know, a part of the thought process and a part of the culture for supply chain. But like you say, what that means is you sort of get stuck in the way that we're doing it today and can only look at you know, what they'd call incremental improvements or continuous improvement. And that's really a different thought process and a different approach than doing disruptive innovation, right? Yeah. And adapting to radical changes or driving those radical changes for your industry.
Mm-hmm. And you're using terms that I recently talked to Dr. Adam Milosky about disruptive innovation and things like that. And he's like, his thing was, are you pursuing incremental gains or are you actually innovating? Because these are two different things, and people use innovation to indicate they're doing something cool when they're really only making these incremental gains. So at this point in time, how should a company be pursuing this continuous innovation, this disruptive innovation, so they can stay ahead of the competition?
I mean, that's really the key question, right? If you want to move to the next level, disruptive innovation, how do you do it? Mm-hmm. And I would put that probably into there are three different things that the companies that I see doing it well share as characteristics. So the first thing is they actually have a team of innovators inside the company whose full-time job is to work on cool new stuff, right?
So they've made that investment.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And these are people who I'll say they're high performers, right? They've done well in the business. They've got successful careers. They understand the business. Also, they've been around a little bit, so that it's actually they're a part of the business, not aside from the business, right? Not siloed again, like we were talking about earlier.
Okay.
So you've got full-time people that are developing prototypes, running tests, setting up labs, but they're intellectually curious. They have the freedom to play around and experiment with things without everything necessarily having to be a guaranteed win and to show an immediate ROI. And actually what I've seen is some companies are like setting up innovation centers, whole facilities dedicated or part of a facility dedicated to this. And what's cool is I've seen a handful of these experiments spin off into new divisions for the company and even become new companies that get spun off. But the key there is, I think, you know, on the one hand, you need to give them freedom. And on the other hand, you still need to keep them tied to what's happening in the business so that they're relevant. So, there's this balance of giving them the freedom to explore and play and experiment, and at the same time, keeping them tied to what you're doing so that they understand your problems and you can collaborate on showing the value of the experiments they're running where it makes sense. So that's the first one, is actually having innovators in the company. I think the second thing that I see companies doing is getting engaged in what I'd call the innovation communities outside of their business. So that means plugging into venture capital firms and the whole startup ecosystem. So rather than just benchmarking against what our competitors are doing, which is really where we tend to focus, getting out into these innovation ecosystems lets you get a glimpse of the future, right? It lets you see down the road at what's possible, and it kind of opens up your imagination. And actually, it can give you the opportunity to jump on big opportunities that your competitors and other folks in the industry are too slow to catch. So, like you can get involved in pitch days for startup companies or become a mentor for startup incubators. These are all ways that you can get in there, see entrepreneurs that are coming up with new ideas, get an early look at the technology in the pipeline. The other thing I'm starting to see is more and more of the supply chain conferences are starting to incorporate showcases for early stage innovative companies. So that's actually another benefit of getting out of the shop and going to conferences, is it's starting to be a place that innovators are able to come and show off their new technologies. The third thing I'd say is that some of the bigger players out there are actually setting up their own angel capital or their own venture capital investment funds. And what's interesting is, you know, that's a different level, right? They're not just scouting for new technologies. They're actually coming to the table with dollars ready to invest to support innovations that align with their business. So, you know, but those early investors get early access to technologies, but they also get a better understanding of the problem that the technology solves, and they get to help shape the direction that the technology goes, right? So, like, if they find a technology that's really promising, then they've really got leverage to decide, do we want this technology to be a supplier to us? You know, basically we can invest and help get the company going so that we can buy from them in the future. Or in some cases, you know, it's because we want to help this technology get going and get a little bit of market traction. And then we're just going to buy the technology and pull it into our company. And in the process of getting the intellectual property, we also now, that becomes a way of acquiring talent, right? Folks that have innovated and developed the technology and built out the market for it.
It sort of protects your secret sauce too, doesn't it?
That's right. It's a way of, building in some innovation and investing in innovation without having to have it inside of your own company, right? So the funny thing is that all three of those strategies, right? The internal experimentation, engaging with the ecosystem, and actually setting up your own venture capital fund. None of those are traditionally a part of supply chain's responsibility, right? Those things all happen in other parts of the business. But I think that if companies are going to keep up with the pace of change and stay abreast of supply chain innovation, those things need to be happening inside of the supply chain. So all in all, you know, we need to build on the success that we've had around continuous improvement efforts, but now we need to start incorporating some of these disruptive innovation efforts into the supply chain too.
Daniel Stanton's been my guest on this episode of the Make It Right podcast. Known as Mr. Supply Chain, he's the author of Supply Chain Management for Dummies. And he also shares his knowledge as a LinkedIn Learning instructor with those interested in supply chain management. Daniel and I had a lengthy conversation. So on the next episode of the Make It Right podcast, I hope you'll join us when he shares his thoughts on the need to constantly pursue the dominant paradigm, as well as a skills and education growth and enhancement program to keep you employed and engaged. I hope you'll join us then. If you've got a topic you'd like us to discuss on the Make It Right podcast, please get in touch at makeitrightpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube, and follow us from the various links on the podcast page at lucidi4.com, and subscribe to the podcast at our RSS feed. I'm Janet Eastman. Thanks for listening to the Make It Right podcast.